here's your moderator, Dana Rodriguez.
Thank you very much, Debbie, and welcome everybody to Minds Over Matter. We hope you are having a lovely day today. It's beautiful out there, but if you can spare us an hour of your time tonight, we would appreciate it very much because Minds Over Matter is an audience participation quiz program. So, of course, we're welcoming your participation out there. All you have to do is give us a call. That number is area code 415-841-4134. Again, that's area code 415-841-4134. And we also have a toll-free number, yes, we really do, and that is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. We'll be taking your questions on current events, movies, history, literature, geography, television, radio, science, and whatever else. So I'm happy to say we have two brand-new people here tonight. No, not brand-new, they're pretty old, actually, but they're two people have not been here before, let's put it that way. So they're here for their first time, so I hope you'll be very kind to them. And all your abuse can be directed toward me, because I'm used to it. So you'll hear more about them momentarily, but we'll be taking your usual amount of questions. So get in as soon as you can. Again, 415-841-4134 or toll-free 866-798-8255. Just to remind you of our email address, which is mindsovermatter, mindsovermatter, all strung together in one word, and that is at yahoo.com. We don't read them during the show, but they all get read. So, also, if you would like to hear our show online, you can do that anywhere in the world simply by going to kalw.org. That is kalw.org. And if you'd like a podcast of the show, the lovely and talented Debbie is here and will do her usual excellent job at kalw.org and iTunes and wherever reasonably good shows are stored. So, okay, all that being said, we will start with the round of introductions, then a round of questions. Here's the first. Michael Gorin has thoughtfully given me three different options for his introduction, so I will pick one. Michael Gorin has been described as having the perfect face for radio. I think we can all say that about ourselves. So thank you very much, and you will read Sharon's.
Okay. Sharon Richards recently retired from the pinnacle of middle management and is now a wildlife docent. Handling snakes and tarantulas has prepared her well for tonight's guest stint on Minds Over Matter.
There you go.
Unlike Madison Bumgardner, our moderator Dana Rodriguez has not hit two home runs on opening day since never.
That's right. And all that being said, we will start with Michael Gorin.
Okay. So according to a study published by the British Medical Journal back in 2005, playing the didgeridoo has been found to be of benefit to those suffering from what medical condition?
Hmm. Well, when I was in Australia, I saw somebody playing the didgeridoo, and it's extremely long. It's about 15 or 20 feet long, and maybe it's for lung problems, maybe, to help you inhale.
You're in the ballpark, I'll say that. Yeah.
How about asthma?
No, no. You know, there is some anecdotal evidence suggesting it's helpful in dealing with asthma, but there's a specific medical condition.
So you're in the ballpark when you say something to do with the lungs?
It's something that's treated by a pulmonologist, let's put it that way, if that helps.
Oh. Hmm.
Aspergillus.
Pulmonologist. All right. Pneumonia.
No.
Okay. Go ahead.
Collapsed lung?
No.
Oh. No. All right. Read the question once more.
Okay. According to a study published by the British Medical Journal in 2005, playing the didgeridoo has been found to be of benefit to those suffering from what medical condition?
All right. All right. Leave it out.
Okay. Certainly.
All right. Thank you. And Sharon, you go ahead.
Okay. Last week, our friend Lori started with a question involving an acronym, and I enjoy acronyms. And this one has to do with during the Second World War, there was a Second World War operation by British scientists, oil companies, and armed forces to relieve dependence on oil tankers, which could be slowed by bad weather or they could be sunk by German submarines. It was called Pluto, P-L-U-T-O. What do the letters in Pluto signify?
Does the P stand for petroleum?
No.
All right. Pluto. P-L-U-T-O.
Like Pluto.
Right.
And does the U stand for U-boat at all? Or?
No, it doesn't.
Okay, or the O for oil?
No.
Oh, my, okay.
I actually learned this in the fifth grade.
Boom.
All right. Thank you for making me feel even worse. Okay. I have no idea.
Do you want me to tell you?
No. Oh. Let people guess. Okay. Read the question once more.
Okay. Operation Pluto was a Second World War operation by British scientists, oil companies, and armed forces to relieve dependence on oil tankers, which could be slowed by bad weather and were susceptible to German submarines. What did the acronym Pluto signify?
All right. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Ever Matter.
Gareth from Haywood.
Hi, Gareth.
I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
What was the first film they've seen in its entirety in a four-hour time slot? I'm not sure I asked this question before.
Say it again, Gareth. I'm sorry, I didn't hear the first part.
What was the first epic film to be seen in a four-hour time slot?
The first network show to be seen in a four-hour time slot?
The first epic film.
Oh, okay. So it was a film that was shown on TV?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was seen on another network, by the way.
Well... Oh, sorry. So that's including commercials, obviously. Well, what year was this, Gareth?
Oh, let's see. Oh, wait a minute. How are you dead?
Yeah, go ahead.
Wait a second. It's I gave you a clue. It's a war film.
How about
late 50s.
Late 50s war film.
Yeah.
The Bridge on the River Kwai?
What's that?
The Bridge on the River Kwai?
Yeah, get yourself a bell. It was first seen on ABC in September of 66, but it was repeated on CBS in two parts later on.
Okay, all right.
My second question.
Yes.
Yeah, Howard Lowenstein, he was in New York City Congress, and his best film was a humanitarian award given, named after him, that's given every year. And he saw a best film for investigating the death of a member of Johnson's cabinet, that more than one person was involved. You know who it was? Who the man who was assassinated was?
The man who... Okay, now I know Howard Lowenstein was a congressman, and I know he was assassinated. What was the other part of the question?
Well, he was known for investigating the assassination of a presidential candidate that he said that... There was one person involved, but he said another one may have been, more than one person may have been involved.
Oh, I see. So, presidential candidate, the assassination. So, George Wallace?
No.
Was the attempted assassination of the president?
No, he was assassinated. I'll give you a clue. He was assassinated in the hotel lobby.
Oh, Kennedy.
Oh, then Robert Kennedy.
Yeah, Robert Kennedy. He's
right.
Proven that... That Sir Anthony was not involved in this, went on for years and years, and ironically, he would get assassinated by some escaped inmate.
Oh, interesting. All right. Thanks, Gareth.
Yeah.
And you're listening to Minds Over Matter. We're here every Sunday at 7 p.m. Hope you're enjoying the show. Our panel tonight, Michael Gorin, Trader Joe's, and Sharon Richards, retired insurance executive and museum docent. And I'm your moderator, Dana Rodriguez. You are listening to us on 91.7 FM, that's KALW, your local public radio station. Please give us a call, area code 415-841-4134, or toll free 866-798-8255. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, this is Ryan from Chicago.
Hi, Ryan.
The medical condition that the didgeridoo is useful for treating bronchitis?
No, that is not it. No.
Okay. Okay, I have a movie question.
Okay.
And it might be very easy depending on what you've been watching on Netflix. But the question is, so what do these five film directors have in common? John Ford, William Wyler, John Huston, Frank Capra, and George Stevens.
Well, they all made films for the United States government during World War II in various capacities. Capra made propaganda films here in the United States, but the rest were, I think, were combat, made combat-related films. you know, Ford in the South Pacific and D-Day, and then Houston in the South Pacific, and Stevens in the in Europe, and Weiler in the Air Force, U.S. Air Force.
Yep, that's the answer I was going for.
All right.
Pretty much.
I definitely would. I'd recommend the documentary series that just came out on Netflix.
I understand it's back. Yeah. I read a review of it. The New York Times said it was very good. So
sounds like you don't need to watch it, but still worth your time.
No, I'm sure it would be worth my time. Thank you very much for the question.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. Bye bye. All right, my turn here. Let me see. Let me give you a couple of questions. What was the first U.S. consumer product, and it's a very well-known consumer product, the first U.S. consumer product to be mass-sold in the Soviet Union? What was then the Soviet Union, anyway? What very well-known U.S. consumer product was the first U.S. product to be mass-sold in the Soviet Union?
Can you tell us when?
Yeah, it would be...
early 80s?
No, before that. Okay. 60s, early 60s.
Oh, Levi's.
No. Mm-mm. So, again, what was the first U.S. mass consumer product, and it's a very well-known product, still very much with us, to be sold in the Soviet Union? Legally, I mean. And second question is, what is the only part of the human body that has no blood supply? It takes its oxygen supply from the air. What is the only part of the human body that has no direct blood supply?
It's not. Is it? This may be too specific. It's not the septum, is it, though?
No.
Okay.
Our hair?
No. So it is the only part of the human body with no direct blood supply. It takes its oxygen supply from the air.
Well, I can think of a person who has no blood supply to his brain, and he's running our country.
Yeah, right.
I'm sorry.
And... again, what was the first U.S. consumer product, very well-known product, to be mass-sold in the Soviet Union, legally? So,
can I guess some kind of automobile?
It is not any kind of automobile.
Okay.
Is it a beverage?
You're closer.
Mm.
And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, I have a political question.
Okay.
So, here goes. In 13 of the 14 presidential elections from 1952 through 2004,
mm-hmm.
one of three last names appeared on the Republican ticket. What are those three last names?
Well, Bush must be one.
Oh, yes.
And let me think about that for a minute. One of three last names appeared on... So it can be either president or vice president, correct?
That's right. On the ticket in either slot.
Could Dole be one?
Dole is one. He was on there...
Twice.
96 as Veep and 96
right.
as Prez candidate.
So you have Bush, Dole, and...
Going how far back?
Since
52.
Well, yeah, Nick. Yeah, of course, you're right. Nixon.
Yes. That's the third.
Right.
And I probably
Excellent.
Got some guesses on
that's
some of your other questions, if that's okay.
No, go ahead. It's fine. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. This is Laurie in the Richmond.
All right.
What about Coca-Cola for...
Not Coca-Cola. Nope.
Am I close?
It's not Coca-Cola. I'll just say that.
All right. I knew you would do that. Okay. So I'm a huge WW2 person, but Pluto I have not heard of. I want to be able to answer it, but I can't. So I'm going to ask you a WW2 question.
All right.
Okay. So remember we rounded up those people, the Japanese?
Right.
Right. But we didn't round up my people, the Germans. How many incidents of sabotage were there from the Japanese? And were there any from the Germans?
I think... Of course, I'm only vaguely guessing. I don't think there were any from the Japanese.
That's correct.
And I do believe there were a few from the Germans, though.
There were many.
In the East Coast and the Midwest.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
So.
And then one other question about that. Okay, so how many German spies, right, who went to England were actually effective.
Well,
weren't turned.
Any guesses here?
Mm-mm.
No? No, we don't know that.
Zero,
no.
Yep. Okay, so it's not Coke, and you're not going to tell me it's another consumer thing, right? You're never giving me any.
Well, it's a consumer product, definitely.
Right, so I'm trying to think, because I was in Czechoslovakia when it was communist, and there weren't a huge amount of consumer products available.
Right.
Well,
I can't speak for Czechoslovakia. I can only speak for the Soviet Union.
Right, but believe me, they controlled them.
Right.
I know.
Right.
Okay, so Coke, I can't think of anything else.
All right,
take it easy.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
And Mike, it's your turn.
Okay. So a more involved question in this case. And this is according to the Pew Research Center, as of March 8th, so just, 20 odd days ago, there are 15 countries in the world with female heads of state or government. Which of them or how many of them can you name? There are 15, 1-5.
Well, let's see.
Theresa May in England.
Right. Angela Merkel in Germany. And when you say head of state, head of government, depends whether you're including kings and queens with that.
No. They're all presidents, prime ministers, or the chancellor, Angela Merkel.
Okay.
Yes.
And so we named the easiest two. Liberia.
Mm-hmm. That is right, yes.
Whose name is what?
Helen Johnson Sirleaf.
Yes, Sirleaf. She was Harvard educated, in fact.
Right.
Yes.
And... okay. How many are in the... are there any in the Americas?
Costa Rica had a woman president. Is she still in office?
I see. Not according to this. No, I see just one in the Americas.
Well, there was the... well, she's not in office anymore. The one in Brazil and the one in Argentina are both gone. I think there's one... was there one in Guyana? Is there one in Guyana?
I don't have that down here.
All right.
No.
Okay. And are there any more in Europe?
Yes, there are.
Let's see. There is a woman. Let me see with a woman prime minister. Okay, I have to think this over. So why don't you repeat the question, if you would.
Yes, as of March 8th, so early last month, there are 15 countries in the world with female heads of state or government.
And you're not counting kings and queens?
Not counting kings and queens.
Okay,
yes.
All right. Okay. And we'll let people guess at that. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hello.
Hi.
This is Janet from Santa Cruz with Chris and Evan. And the three of us suffer from sleep apnea. And we think this is what the didgeridoo is good for.
You're right.
Oh,
actually,
excellent.
I bought one about 3 days ago because I have sleep apnea myself. So we'll see. Perhaps I'll check in with you at a later date and I'll be in a good mood. Yes.
And you know what, Mike? So do I.
Oh, my. Okay.
I don't.
Uh-oh. You're the odd man out.
Yeah.
And also, I know Iceland has a female head of state.
Excellent.
Well, it did. Her name was Vigdis Finnbogadottir, I think. But I don't believe she's president any longer, as far as I know. But I... because she was elected back in 1980, not long after Maggie Thatcher, but I don't believe she's still the president. Yeah.
I heard something about the news in Iceland, and I thought that it was a woman that they were referring to.
Oh, okay.
And then I have another guess on that body part. Is it sclera?
Is it? Say it again, please.
Sclera.
Sclera.
Your eye.
Oh, it has to do with your eye.
Okay, so the sclera is the white part of your eye?
No, not that. Be a little more. Give me another eye part, if you would.
Well, the cornea.
Exactly. Yes.
Huh?
Very
okay.
Good.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Good job. Thank you.
Bye.
Yes, the only part of the human body that has no direct blood supply is the cornea. Very good. And Sharon, it's your turn.
Okay, I have a question that. Pertains to Governor George Pataki, 2003, when he was the governor in New York. He granted the first posthumous pardon in New York State history. Who did he pardon?
So this is obviously somebody very famous.
It was somebody well known It was somebody who was in prison for something that happened in 1964, and he was pardoned posthumously in 2003 by Governor George Pataki. Who was this person?
Was it Malcolm X, was it?
No.
They were in prison in 1964.
The act that got him in prison occurred in 1964. Yeah.
Huh.
Well, wait a minute. He was convicted in 1964 in a trial.
So it was a posthumous pardon. So this person, did they die in jail?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
And was this a nonviolent crime?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Was it a political crime?
No.
All right. All right, read it once more if you would.
In 2003, Governor George Pataki granted the first posthumous pardon in New York State history. Who did he pardon?
All right. And it pertained to somebody who was convicted in 1964. Or who was in jail in 1964.
It says for his 1964 conviction. So I'm not quite sure when the act occurred, like a year or so before then, but in the early 60s.
This person is famous beyond that crime, or is it famous mostly for that?
He's not mostly famous for the crime. He's well known for other reasons.
Okay. All right. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
So hi, it's Ed. So I had the answer for the cornea for the lady. She got it before me, which is okay for the only part of the human body that doesn't get blood fizzles, the cornea.
Good.
Okay. Second is Russia. I know of people in Russia. The biggest deficiency in the past was toilet paper. Was this one of the answers?
Say it again, please.
They had really problem getting toilet papers.
Oh, no. Not that.
No.
Not that.
Okay. All right. So I'll give you a couple of questions.
All right.
This metallic blue element gets its name from blue color in Arabic. You know which one?
Repeat it, would you, Ed?
Okay. A bluish metallic, element.
Right.
Gets its name from Arabic, which means blue. Or the blue. Give it to the audience. It's kind of
interesting. Right.
It's the only one from Arabic, actually. Well, several, but this one directly, it means blue in Arabic.
Okay.
The second thing. Which state has three more cows than people? As many cows as many people.
Well, how about Wyoming?
No. Another one.
Montana.
Yes, Montana.
Very good.
Okay, last one.
Yes.
This U.S. city is is bigger than the smallest U.S. state. What is the city and what is the state?
So this city, the land mass of this city.
Landlocked city that is bigger than the smallest state. The smallest U.S. state.
Right. Well, smallest U.S. state is Rhode Island, so it's bigger than Rhode Island, I take it.
It is.
I know Juneau has a lot of area to it. I believe Juneau, Alaska.
Juneau, Alaska it is.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good job. All right. Let's see here. Let me give you... All right. I'm going to give you a movie question. What I'm going to do is give you six sets of actors. Each set of actor played a famous literary character in different versions of this, playing different, the same literary character in different versions of the famous literary source. So again, these are six sets of two actors. Each of them played a famous literary character. So I want you to tell me the literary character involved, okay? So number one, Orson Welles and George C. Scott. Number two, Ronald Coleman and Peter Finch. Number three, Jeremy Irons and James Mason. Number four, Gary Oldman and Alec Guinness. Number five, Edmund O'Brien and John Hurt. number 6, Richard Harris and Mel Ferrer. So again, each of these sets of two actors played a famous literary character. So I want the character's name. Once more, number 1, Orson Welles and George C. Scott. Number 2, Ronald Colman and Peter Finch. Number 3, Jeremy Irons and James Mason. Number 4, Gary Oldman and Alec Guinness. Number 5, Edmund O'Brien and John Hurt. Number 6, Richard Harris and Mel Ferrer. I'll give you each one guess.
Okay. I know Jeremy Irons and James Mason played, is it Humbert Humbert from Lolita?
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Very good.
Okay, I'm not sure, but did Alec Guinness and Gary Oldman both play Pip in Great Expectations?
Nope, no. Not okay. That. Do you want to guess once more, since you got that one wrong? I could do that for you.
I can't think of anybody else.
All right. Well, you're right. Jeremy Irons and James Mason both played Humbert Humbert. All right. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hey, guys. It's Alec in San Francisco.
Hi, Alec.
So not only did I get scooped on cornea like Eid, I got scooped on didgeridoo, and I've been carrying that knowledge around with me for 9 years.
Oh, what a shame.
To use it. But if you go on YouTube and see what you have to learn to do to benefit from playing the didgeridoo, okay. It'll put you right off. I spent a whole afternoon trying to do it, and I couldn't do it at all. Yeah. You have to push air out with your cheeks through your mouth while breathing in through your nose, which is harder than it sounds.
And do you do this while you're sleeping, like with a CPAP machine?
No, like if you learn to play the didgeridoo, you have to do that to play a continuous sound, and just the effort of doing that will train your muscles so that your airways open inside your head.
Oh, I see.
Fantastic.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah. Good luck with that.
Thank you. All right.
So let's see. The March 8th date was given for the women leaders, and I think that the leader of South Korea was still in place then.
Oh, that's a good, very good point.
Oh, gosh. You know, it's not on the list, but that's...
I
think he's right about that, though.
And I think
she
her
was
name
still in office.
Is something like Park Jun-hee.
Yeah, I think you're right. All right.
So can I get a provisional bell?
There you go.
Okay. No idea, since it wasn't Coca-Cola, was it what it was in the Soviet Union. Gary Oldman and Alec Guinness, I think, both played Smiley.
George
spy.
Smiley, correct. Ah. Yes. Excellent.
And I don't know anything about Mel Ferrer, but did he and Richard Harris both play King Arthur?
That is correct as well.
All right.
Very good.
Cool. So I have a question for you guys, which is, what style of British popular music was popularized in the 1950s by Lonnie Donegan?
Go ahead. It's skiffle, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is skiffle.
Yeah. Okay.
Excellent.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Does your
Bye-bye.
Chewing gum lose its flavor on the bedpost overnight?
Oh, is that it?
That was his hit song, yes.
Right. Okay. So we're almost to halfway through the show, so let's repeat any questions that have not been answered yet. Mike, you go first.
Yes. As of March 8th of this year, there are 15 countries with female heads of state or government, and we're still looking for, it looks like about 10 or 11 of them.
Okay. Is that it for you? That's it?
Yes.
Okay. And Sharon.
Okay, we're still looking for the name of the person that George Pataki pardoned in 2003. He was the first posthumous pardon in New York State history.
For somebody convicted in 1964.
Yes.
Okay.
And then the other one is, what does the letters in the acronym Pluto stand for? It was an operation called Operation Pluto in Second World War. Involved British scientists, oil companies, and armed forces to help relieve the dependence on oil tankers.
Was the 64 crime, was it anything to do with civil disobedience?
Not exactly. I guess it was a form of disobedience.
Was it somebody like burning a bra or something like that?
No, but it was, you're kind of getting close to the idea of it.
Burning a draft card?
No, no. It wasn't political in that sense. It was more social, I would say. Had to do with social acceptance of things.
Oh, something to do with gay rights?
No.
Abortion?
No.
Okay. All right. So, nothing to do with gay
Shall
history.
I give you a clue?
Yeah, go ahead.
It had to do with obscenity. What was perceived as obscene in 1960s.
So was it Allen Ginsberg?
No.
Lenny Bruce.
Yes.
Yes, all right.
It was Lenny Bruce. He was on trial following a performance in a Greenwich Village nightclub that was deemed to be obscene.
Okay.
And he actually was tried and convicted and went to prison for it.
Okay. All right. Thank you for those 20 guesses. All right. And let's go to a call. Oops, I didn't repeat mine. Well, yeah, we'll go to a call and then I'll do it. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Is it I?
It is you.
Well, the product that first sold in Russia legally, I believe it was Pepsi-Cola, not Coca-Cola.
That is correct, Pepsi-Cola. Excellent.
And the question you asked after that, I forgot.
Oh, the question I asked after that. Oh, that was answered. That was the one about the cornea.
Okay. All right.
Right.
I thought it was the knee, since they take so long to heal. But
Anyway, well, thank you for that.
You're welcome.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right. Let me just quickly repeat what I have left out, which isn't very much. Actually, it's only this one. These sets of actors have played what famous literary character? The ones we have left are number one, Orson Welles and George C. Scott. Number two, Ronald Colman and Peter Finch. Number three, Edmund O'Brien and John Hurt. And that's it. So, okay.
Can I attempt one of those?
Yes.
Ronald Colman and Peter Finch, was it possibly from Tale of Two Cities?
No.
No, okay.
Let's see. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Is that me?
It is you.
Oh, my God. It's Sparky and Maddie. How are you all doing?
Hi, good.
Right.
Good, and the former Leonard Alfred Schneider, I was kind of waiting for that. Also known as Lenny Bruce.
Oh, all right. There you go.
It was enough coaxing. I was kind of up and I had that immediately. Actually, I think we're done.
All right.
What? That's it. Bye.
All right. And let's see now. Whose turn was it? I think it is your turn, Mike.
Okay. So I actually had you in mind when I wrote this, Dana. No pressure, of course, but
yeah, we'll see.
Ariel Dorfman's 1990 play, Death and the Maiden, made its Broadway premiere in 1992. Who played the three lead roles and who directed?
On Broadway?
On Broadway.
Oh. And I might know the movie version of it. Mm.
They're heavy hitters.
I'm sure they
are. Three of them and the director. Yes.
Is the director Mike Nichols?
It is. Yes, indeed. Very good.
What was the year?
The play was written in 1990, and it premiered on Broadway in 92.
Is Sigourney Weaver maybe one? Or she might have done the movie.
She was in the Polanski movie.
All right. They're all people well-known in films, I take it.
Yes, indeed.
Right. Okay. Why don't you repeat that question?
Okay. Ariel Dorfman's 1990 play, Death and the Maiden, made its Broadway premiere in 1992. So now I just need to know who played the three lead roles.
1992. Not Meryl Streep, is it?
No, you're really in the ballpark there.
So it's not Sigourney Weaver, it's not Meryl Streep, but I'm in the ballpark.
American actress?
Yes.
Kathleen Turner?
No.
You can say.
No, I've got nothing.
Oh, okay.
I'm just rustling my paper.
Leave it out. And actually, why don't you go ahead, too, Sharon?
Okay. My current favorite actor is Bill Nighy. And I was fortunate to see him in person in February at the Mostly British Film Festival.
Yeah.
He's just as charming in person as you can imagine in the movies. What's the name of the character played by Bill Nighy in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? It's a very funny name.
Right. I have no idea.
That surprises me.
All right. No, it shouldn't surprise you at all. All right. So why don't you give that once more, if you would.
Okay. What character does Bill Nighy play in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
I strongly suspect our audience will know, though.
Oh, I'm sure they will.
Yeah. Right. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, it's Tom in Oakland.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. Alex, yeah, some guesses.
Right.
The consumer product in the USSR, how about Pepsi?
It is Pepsi. Somebody guessed just before you, but you got it, so that's fine.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't hear it. A female head of state, how about Chile?
Yes, indeed.
Excellent.
Michelle Bachelet.
Very excellent. Good job.
And Bangladesh?
Yes, again.
So I can't remember her name.
That's okay.
That makes two of us.
You got the country.
Half a bell. let's see. Orson Welles and George C. Scott, they both play Macbeth?
No. Although they might have done that at some point, but that's not. These are film versions, so this is...
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah.
The John Hurt one and Edmund O'Brien, is that Winston Smith?
It is Winston Smith, 1984.
Yay.
Very good.
And the blue element, I think, is cobalt.
Oh.
That...
I'm gonna give you a... all right,
that's just
very
a guess,
good.
Though.
That is correct.
I won't take the belt.
I've
back,
been told that is correct, so that's fine. Excellent.
Yay. Okay, and then I've got a couple of, I've got two trilogy questions. First, a literary trilogy. What were the three books in the Dust Bowl trilogy? And who wrote them?
You're not talking about Steinbeck, are you?
I am, yes.
Okay, well then, The Grapes of Wrath, obviously.
Yeah.
And would Of Mice and Men be one?
Yep, that's the second one. The third one's the...
Well, in Dubious Battle?
Ah, very good.
All right.
And then one other trilogy question, which is not very well known. I didn't really know about it, but apparently this actor and filmmaker made a series of movies called the Numbskull Trilogy between them. And there's actually four movies in the trilogy, so...
I'm not familiar.
Any
with
idea?
That. Not familiar. Hmm? Is it an American filmmaker?
Yes, American and actor. Yeah.
So it's not Jerry Lewis, is it?
No, no, it's more recent.
More recent than Jerry Lewis.
Yeah.
But it's a single person. Like if I said the Farrelly brothers, that wouldn't be it.
No, not it's not a single person.
Not a single. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. The filmmakers and the actor.
So the filmmaker and the actor are not the same person?
That's correct. They are not the same person.
Oh, I see. It's called.
But it's the same filmmakers for all four movies and the same actor for all four movies.
Oh, and it's called the Numbskull Trilogy. So this is within the last, say, 20 years or so?
Yes.
It wouldn't be the Dumb and Dumber movies with Jim...
No.
It have to be three.
Good guess.
Are the titles...
And there's actually four movies, like I said.
Four movies, okay. So are the titles all play off one another? Like
no.
No, okay.
No.
Can you give us another
hint? The actor's a multiple Oscar winner in multiple categories.
Huh.
And the filmmakers are also Oscar winners.
Gosh.
In multiple categories, I think.
Oh, the Numbskull Trilogy? Or Numbskull. I have no idea. Do you want to give us a hint? Another hint?
Let's see. I mean, another hint. Well, George Clooney is the actor.
Oh, then it must be the Coen brothers, right?
It is the Coen brothers, yes.
So it's, I guess, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou is probably one.
That's right,
and
yeah.
Hail Caesar?
Hail Caesar.
Hail Caesar, yep.
And so what would be...
Oh, there was that.
What was the other one?
There was one with Brad Pitt and Frances McDormand and sort of had a political...
Burn After Reading.
All right, good. Very good. Excellent.
And the fourth one is the only movie that they directed but didn't write.
Oh.
Just...
Oh, no. I was going to say it was the... Aren't they the ones that did the remake of True Grit? But that's not... But that's not it.
But they did. Yeah, they did write the screenplay for that.
Okay. No, we don't know that. I'm sorry.
It's Intolerable Cruelty.
Oh, all right. Okay.
A fine movie. Thanks a lot. Great
Thank
show,
you.
As always.
All right. Appreciate that. Thank you. All right. I think it's my turn here. All right. I'm going to give you some famous firsts, and by that, I'm going to give you the names of four different people who were the first person to do a particular thing. Okay, to achieve a particular thing. So these are the first four people to do what? And they're all, there are four different things I'm looking for. Number one, Virginia Dare, last name D-A-R-E. Number two, Elizabeth Blackwell. Number three, Jules Lyotard. Jules Lyotard. Number four, Nellie Taylor Ross. Again, these are the first four people to achieve what thing? And there are four different things here. Number one, Virginia Dare. Number two, Elizabeth Blackwell. Number three, Jules Lyotard. Number four, Nellie Taylor Ross. Yes?
I'd like to try the first one.
Okay.
Wasn't Virginia Dare the first person born in the, not the United States, but, you know, the Plymouth?
Yeah, not Plymouth.
No,
but
no, no.
She
but
was the first child born in one of the European colonies. Right. Yes. Right.
Which one?
Oh, in it was in North Carolina. Okay. So I couldn't tell you exactly which, yeah. And I should one of the English-speaking colonies. Maybe that's a better way to put it, because I think there were people born in the Spanish-speaking colonies before then. So, yes, you got that. Very good. So we still have Elizabeth Blackwell, Jules Lyotard, and Nellie Taylor Ross. What were they the first person to do? Do you want to guess on any of these, Mike?
No. The okay. word no.
That's all right.
Nellie Taylor Ross, that's really familiar sounding. Yeah.
That name bounces around American history. Mm-hmm. So, and the number to join us is area code 415-841-4134. Again, this is Minds Over Matter. We're here every Sunday at 7 p.m. Area code 415-841-4134 or toll-free 866-798-8255. Let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hello?
Hi, you're on.
Oh, hi. This is Vicki in San Francisco.
Hi.
Lyotard, does that have something to do with the Lyotard?
I knew somebody was going to guess that, and you are correct in this respect, that this person did give their name to the Lyotard, but that's not what I'm looking for. So, you're right about that, so I'll give you a small bell for it. There you go.
Oh, thank you. Okay, so Orson Welles and George C. Scott, were they both Ebenezer Scrooge?
Oh, that's an excellent guess. And I think Orson Welles did play Ebenezer Scrooge on the radio, but not in the movies. So,
oh, okay.
But no, that's not so. That's not strictly what I'm looking for there.
Okay, and then Bill Nighy played Flarty Bartfast in A Hitchhiker's Guide.
Yes, and I've always thought that would be a wonderful name for one of our BART trains because it goes fast.
And then I just want to mention about the female heads of state. This one is not a head of state, but she's actually a royal who performs duties in her government. She works in the government, and that's Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands.
Okay.
So
I asked him
elected.
About...
She's not elected, but she right. actually functions.
I asked him about royalty, and he said no, so I don't know. But
yeah,
you're right.
But that's an interesting point, though. Yes.
She is the ceremonial head of government, so you're right about that. But.
Yes, but she actually does work,
okay.
Unlike the other ones that are...
All right, I'll give you a bell for that.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi. I have a question about Lenny Bruce. I don't know what year it was, but Lenny Bruce was prosecuted in Los Angeles for obscenity. The prosecutor was also, he was actually more well known as being a defense attorney. I was wondering if you know who that was.
Was it Roy Cohn?
No.
So the prosecutor who prosecuted Lenny Bruce in Los Angeles was better known as a defense attorney. Is that what you said? Okay.
Yeah.
Melvin Belli, a defense attorney?
Mm-hmm. No, it wasn't him.
Okay.
So this person was better known as a defense attorney after they were the prosecutor. So that was later date that they were...
They were actually a prosecutor at two different times in their career, but they were more well known as a defense attorney.
Okay. So this would have been, early 60s then?
I'm not quite sure about that. Yeah, probably. I'm guessing like mid-60s, actually.
Oh, okay. No, we do not know.
It was Johnny Cochran.
Oh,
interesting.
Great question.
Good question.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And Mike, it's your turn.
Okay. Well, I do have an Oscar-related question, somewhat. The Oscar statuette is not made of gold. It's an alloy. What name does the alloy go by, and what makes it up?
So it doesn't have even gold plating on it?
It does have gold plating.
All right.
And three medals underneath the gold plating. But the particular alloy that it's made of has a name.
Is there any bronze in it?
Well, bronze is actually a... an
that
alloy.
Is an alloy.
So, yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. Well, bronze is an alloy of
iron
and tin. Is it iron and tin? No.
Well, I'm going to give you it's 93% tin, and I actually think it might be copper and tin in bronze.
Okay.
But, so there's copper and tin in there, and one other lesser known metal.
All right, you can leave that out then.
Okay.
And Sharon, you go too. You have something.
Is there time for a 5-answer question? Probably not.
15 minutes? Probably not. Well, go ahead.
Well, I'm in a Dickens book club, and this is for club members who just may be listening tonight, Claudia.
All right, go ahead.
And Dickens novels are just chock full of main characters and secondary characters, and some have very peculiar names. So I'm going to give you 5 names of characters in Dickens novels and tell me which books they're found in.
All right, that's good.
Okay, and they're not necessarily the main characters, but they're not so minor that they only appear once. They actually add to the storyline.
Like
all these
Mealy
books.
Potatoes.
Okay.
That's a character name.
Is it? I haven't read that one yet. Okay, the first one is Jeremiah Flintwinch. The second is Uncle Pumblechook. The third is Mr. Brownlow. The fourth is Mr. Barkis. And the fifth is Sir Mulberry Hawk, H-A-W-K.
Michael?
No, Mr. Brownlow is from Oliver Twist, is he
that's,
not?
That's right. Oh,
his benefactor, the person who adopts him.
He's
I think his grandfather, actually, his actual grandfather or something like that.
I can't remember who he was, but yeah.
I think it was. And then Mr. Pumblechook is from Great Expectations.
That's right. Yep.
He's the one that brings Pip to meet Miss Havisham for the first time.
And I think he acts. He does a little. He acts out a little scene in a play.
All right. Okay. And what were the other ones left on the list?
Jeremiah Flintwinch.
I don't know.
He was an evil character. Mr. Barkis, who's a good character.
Right.
And some Sir Mulberry Hawk, who's another evil.
I think I know the last two, but I'll give you one more. And Barkis is from Barkis is Willing.
Yes,
very
good.
David Copperfield.
Right.
Who's Peggotty's
Clara Peggotty's
future husband.
Yeah.
Or in the beginning of the book, his future husband. And they do get married.
Right. She was going to be an old spinster, and then
right.
he saved her from it.
Right.
Because Barkis is willing.
Uh-huh. So, okay, leave the others out. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, is that me?
It is you.
Hi, this is Linda Nelsarito.
Hi, Linda.
Yeah, I was called earlier, and I had the answer about Pepsi-Cola, and the caller just before me had it, so I hung up in a fit of pique.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But I wanted to add something about that. That deal was very much brokered by Joan Crawford with her husband, Alfred, I think his name was.
Alfred Steele, right.
So that was kind of one of her last metamorphoses after whatever happened to Baby Jane a couple of years before. So that was kind of an interesting thing. But anyway, congratulations to the new people. They're very brave.
Thank you.
I especially enjoyed the question about Lenny Bruce.
Good.
And one added thing about Eve's call. He asked which city is larger than Rhode Island. I was kind of thinking that was Los Angeles, but...
Well, I'm not sure. Like, yeah, you may be right.
Yeah, maybe I look it up and let you know.
All right.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Linda.
Bye.
And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hello.
Hi, you're on.
Hi, this is Bruce from the Tenderloin.
Hi, Bruce.
And Operation Pluto was an ancillary operation of... Operation Overlord, which is the invasion of Normandy, and Pluto stood for Pipeline Under the Ocean.
Yes, you got it. That's right.
Excellent. Good. I'm glad you got that.
Okay, I have a military-related question, if we have time.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, we know armored track fighting vehicle is a tank these days. Does anyone know how it arrived at that designation?
How it arrived? Oh, tank.
Tank is an acronym? No.
No.
Hmm. Is tank a slang word? Was it a slang word originally?
No.
Okay. So it was created just for this?
No, it was another object which applied to it.
Tank. I know Jeep. but you didn't ask that. Well, that tank comes... Well, they first started using tanks in the First World War. No. Can you want to give us a hint? We can try.
It's a code word.
Oh. That doesn't help.
No, not much. It's interesting, but it doesn't help. Arp, you better tell us. We don't know.
Okay, Winston Churchill was a minister of munitions in the First World War.
Right.
And he was spearheading the development of these armored fighting vehicles. And they codenamed them tanks or cisterns to go to Mesopotamia.
Oh, so nobody would know what they were, in other words.
Right. He originally wanted to call them landships, but actually the name tank caught on for it. And we've known the armored track fighting vehicle as a tank ever since.
Interesting. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. I enjoyed being on.
Thank you. And let's see. I'll give you the numbers here quickly. And if you'd like to call in with a question or answer, those are 415-841-4134. That is 415-841-4134. Or toll-free 866-798-8255. Again, that's 866-798-8255. This is Minds Over Matter. We're here every Sunday at 7 p.m. Feel free to give us a call in the next few minutes. Let's go to a call right now. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Would that be me?
That would be you.
That would be. Okay. I'm calling from northern Minnesota on the north shore of Lake Superior.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah. And let's see. I waited so long, I forgot what I was calling about. Oh, Nellie Taylor Ross
right.
was the first female governor in the United States. She
Excellent.
Was governor of Wyoming.
Very good.
And I think she's still is the only female governor that Wyoming's ever had.
That's possible, yeah. That's very possible.
Yeah, I think so. I lived out there for a while. Let's see. And, Orson Welles and George C. Scott. I'm not sure I heard the question correctly, but I was just tuning in when you were asking.
So,
that.
Well, let me give you the question. So the question was, what literary role did these two actors play in a movie? So
Rochester and Jane Eyre.
Exactly. They both played Mr. Rochester. Very good. Good job.
Wells in the 1940s, and George Scott was, I think that one was around 1970.
Right.
So.
Excellent. Good job.
Okay. And would you like a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Besides tomato juice, which is technically a fruit, what are the seven remaining vegetables found in V8 juice?
I know watercress is one.
Mm-hmm.
Beets.
Yep.
Radishes.
Celery.
Celery is three, yep.
Good. Excellent.
Because I've heard this before. carrots.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing very well.
Lettuce,
yep.
Some more green ones. Cucumber's not in there. How many of them? How are we up to?
I think you're up to five or six now.
I think you're up to five. Yeah, there are two green items left.
And that's including the tomato?
Tomato is a fruit, so that doesn't count.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but that would be the eighth. Yeah, that would be the eighth one.
You got the
I'm trying to think
of
watery vegetables.
Yeah.
leafy vegetables.
Spinach.
Yeah.
Yes.
Spinach, yeah.
Spinach
yeah.
is in there, yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And?
We just need one more?
Often a garnish, yep.
What did you just say?
Say it again.
It's often used as a garnish.
Parsley. Oh.
Parsley, yep.
Yes.
Very good.
I wouldn't think of as a vegetable, but it is, I guess.
Good
All
job.
Right. There you go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Credit goes to you, Sharon, because
you
got most of them. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Yeah, see, definitely Juneau, Alaska is much, much, much bigger than Los Angeles for our friend who called me.
All right.
Then also,
zirconium is the element named after the color blue.
Oh.
A chemical element of the color blue, zirconium. Then the last, very quick question, really. The Los Angeles Times today had a big heading. It say, our dishonest president. Whom are they referring to? Our dishonest president. Whom? That's Los Angeles Times. It's not a small paper. Who are they referring to?
Our current president?
Our current president. What is his name?
President Trump.
Yeah, our dishonest president. That is really very strong. That is very strong coming from a major U.S. city.
Yeah.
The man is just shutting the country down. Really, he is. Thank you.
Thanks, Ed.
Thank you.
And our little political commentary at the end of the show. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, is it me?
It is you.
Okay. I usually know it's me, myself.
No, we weren't sure, though. So that's good.
He's a wise man who knows himself.
Half the battle right there, half the battle.
Yeah.
I happen to know the Pepsi-Cola and Serb because I lived in Europe at the time and actually remember it. But then there's a question about female heads of government.
Mm-hmm.
And from my country, there is Erna Solberg, who is prime minister at this time. And I think in Poland, too,
Yes, indeed.
The prime minister is female.
No, prime minister is not female in Poland, is it? Is it really?
Yes,
okay.
It's on my list.
Sorry. Okay, thank you for that.
And what is your country?
Well, then in Myanmar, there is Aung San Suu Kyi, but that's a little iffy exactly what her position is. But
what is your country, sir, that that you said that there was a woman prime minister of?
Norway.
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
Excellent. There you go.
The happiest country in the world.
Yes.
So they say.
Currently, yes, we've passed Denmark. Wow. I have a question, but it's late in the day, so you may want to save it for next week. There is a country that has three counties called Cornwall, Middlesex, and Surrey.
Well, that would be the
England's one.
England.
Well, actually...
There's more than one.
This is a country that has only three counties, and those are the three. Middlesex, by the way, is no longer a county in England, but it used to be.
Oh, we're almost out of time. I feel bad about this now. you better just tell us, because we're out of time. We have to clean up here. So go ahead and tell us.
Okay, it's Jamaica.
Oh, that's an excellent question. I wish we could have done more, given it, you know, more justice to it.
Yeah.
So,
well, I called too late.
All right.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. All right. Time to clean up here. What do we got, Mike?
Okay. Yes. On the heads of state or government leftovers, Croatia, Estonia, Lithuania, Malta, the Marshall Islands, Mauritius, Nepal. And Switzerland did not come up at all. Switzerland, yeah.
All right. And Sharon?
There's just two characters from Dickens' novels that no one guessed. And
Mulberry Hawk is Nicholas Nickleby, right?
Yes.
Okay.
He's a bad guy.
Yeah.
And Jeremiah Flint Winch is from Little Dorrit.
That I didn't
He's an evil character,
all right.
too.
There you go. Was that it for you?
That's all. I think all right. everybody guessed it.
Elizabeth Blackwell was the first woman doctor in the United States, 1849. Jules Lyotard had the first Flying Trapeze Act in the world, 1859. And Ronald Coleman and Peter Finch both played Robert Conway in different versions of Lost Horizon. So if we did not get to your call, we do apologize. Please remember that Minds Over Matter is here every Sunday at 7 p.m. Hope you enjoyed the show. Our panel tonight, my thanks to Mike Gorin and Sharon Richards for sitting in. Thank you very much, both of you. My name is Dana Rodriguez. I've been your moderator. Our thanks to Debbie Kennedy and Steve Wilcott for handling the board and phones. And, of course, our thanks to you for taking the time to tune in and call. And have a great week, everybody. Take care. Join us next Sunday at 7. Bye-bye.